The six-month suspension of NBC News anchor Brian Williams for lying or misremembering is the latest blow to network news outlets. Considering declining viewership, leaner budgets, a greater focus on popular culture, how would you describe the future of network news? It's our big question this hour. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, February 18th. The New York Times is focused on this question in its Room for Debate section this week, saying the suspension of Williams was not just a humiliation for him, but for network news in general. And it wondered, is network news dead? Do you still watch an evening newscast on TV? What keeps you watching? If not, what would bring you back? Do you think it would be a big loss if the nightly news went away? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Mike Wagner, an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. He's an expert on American politics, political communication, political behavior, and religion and politics. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Well, let's start with the suspension of Brian Williams.
Sure.
How do you see this? Do you see this as being a big blow to NBC in particular?
Well, it's certainly a big blow to Brian Williams, and if Lester Holt can't hold Williams' numbers, which were very good in this modern media environment, then it'll be a long-term blow to NBC. Whether their own brand suffers, I think, depends in part on the internal investigation they're doing into Mr. Williams' other behavior. And so if NBC's investigation is very thorough and tough on Brian Williams, that might actually help to restore some trust in NBC's news brand. But as we see more and more coverage about this, a lot of coverage is coming out about other things Brian Williams covered or had talked about in other arenas that may or may not be true or at least need to be investigated. And some work is being done on NBC's reporting more generally. And so they're facing a bit of a crisis in their brand right now. And, a key component of what drives people to watch the news on television and which place they watch is who they trust. And you can't sever those lines of trust. And so NBC is in a pretty tenuous position right now.
And I'm curious, were you surprised that, I don't know, a six-month suspension for at least the allegations of misremembering that we all heard about?
You know, there are television shows, the most television shows don't last 6 months, and now here's a network television news star who's off the air for 6 months, and that's plenty of time for Lester Holt to build an audience, to hold Brian Williams' numbers, to develop and improve upon the already considerable trust that his viewers have in him. And you know, it's just like when a quarterback goes down and the backup plays really well, what happens when the starter is ready again? If the backup's playing well, maybe you keep playing the backup. And Lester Holt is a veteran news person who is widely respected. And if his numbers are good, it's going to be hard to bring Brian Williams back. And that's all assuming that the investigations into what Brian Williams have done don't show very much and come back with evidence that makes it look like his explanation has a reasonable chance of being true. And we don't have much of an idea of whether that's going to be the case.
Do you agree with the New York Times, headline that this was not just a humiliation for Brian Williams, but for all of network news?
It certainly shines a light on a negative trend in network news, which is the public's kind of straight line decline in the trust they give to the mass media and to network news in particular. You know, the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, network television was king, and the audiences now on the network television news are 59% lower than they were at the end of the 1960s, and, you know, 20% lower than they were even 10 or 15 years ago. And so the people who watch are going down, and they're skewing older. And so if network television news can't convince younger people to start watching and keep watching, then they're in trouble.
Why aren't they watching?
Well, one reason is declining trust. And so what causes that? Well, I talked just a second ago about how there were big audiences in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, but the network news was the only television news game in town. And so the network news had an incentive to be broadly non-ideological. They wanted to appeal to everyone, not turn off liberals, not turn off conservatives or moderates, and tell the news in a broad non-ideological way. With the advent of CNN and then Fox News and then MSNBC and a lot of other partisan kinds of news outlets, or at least news outlets that don't have the same kinds of programming that the network news did, people had a different place to go for the news. And so if you were really conservative or really liberal, you could choose a different source. And if you did that, you felt empowered to complain about the network news, especially for politicians. It's a lot harder to blame the media if there are very few media, because you don't want to, you know, as you know, Twain is supposed to have said, you know, pick a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel or can broadcast for free. But as more and more sources became available, politicians thought, well, gosh, I can just go on Fox News, or I can just go on MSNBC. I can talk to my people who are like me. I can avoid the media. I can blame them. I can criticize them all I want. My folks will love that I'm blaming the media. And as I do that, it's gonna, you know, damage the trust that people have in that news media, which has happened over the last several decades.
Yeah. And then there's this. I grew up in one of those households in the 60s where the 5:30 nightly news was the, you know, it was must see TV,
right?
And we all watched it. But now, even though I'm in that aging demographic, I'm not watching it so much anymore, because I can get those news stories often earlier in the day, and from many other, you know, from online as well.
Right. DVR and the internet are real threats to live television news broadcasting. You know, DVR and the internet aren't a threat to the Super Bowl, because you want to watch that when it's happening. But if you don't see the nightly news at 5:30 in 2015, you could DVR it and watch it before bed. Mm-hmm. You could get on the internet and see all the stories that are going to be on it long before the news ever airs. If you missed something, you can go back and watch that video on the internet. If you wanted to see someone else's take on it, you could find it instantly. And so the I've got to be there when it's on or I will miss it factor is gone. And that is a real blow to one of the reasons the network news was so powerful, which was that if you didn't sit down and watch the news at 5:30, you missed it.
Yeah. And still, though, even though the viewership has declined, it's still pretty substantial compared to the rest of media sources, right?
Right. So when there were 13 channels, 70% of Americans watched the nightly news when it was on. There are more than 13 channels now, but still 21, 22 million people watch the network nightly news every night on NBC, CBS, or ABC. Now, when you compare, say, Brian Williams' audience in the last year on 8 or 9 million people on average every weeknight to the top cable network kind of news and public affairs program, the O'Reilly Factor, O'Reilly on his best nights gets 4 million. And so Brian Williams' audience more than doubled a partisan news audience program, even on the best nights of that program. And if you add together the three networks, they dominate CNN, Fox, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox Business, and all those kinds of places. The audience of cable doesn't approach the audience of the network news, even in an era of weakened network news.
Yeah. And would it be a big blow if the nightly news went away?
That would have some really interesting and probably negative effects on things that people who care about democracy care about. So one thing that a lot of research has shown is that people who watch the network news know a lot more about contemporary public affairs and how politics works. And that's especially true for people who don't have higher education. So people are reading newspapers less and less, as we know, but people who are college educated and read newspapers tend to be the most informed about politics. The single factor that reduces that knowledge gap between the most informed and the least informed is who watches network television news. And so even though the network news is now 19 minutes of programming and, you know, 11 minutes of commercials every night, even then, people who watch that know more about politics and are thus more likely to participate in politics than people who don't. And if that goes away, it's not obvious that the internet or other factors would make up that difference in the same kind of way.
So give us a tease in just the minute we have before our first news break. What is the future of network news?
Well, that's a great question. The future of network news involves trying to find ways to connect with people on multiple platforms while still making their broadcast interesting and unique enough to be a place where people want to spend 30 minutes a night. And so they're going to have to keep up with having things on the internet, with tweeting, with Facebook, with all these other kinds of social media to draw in their audience. But they still have to make their television show something worth watching, which is a challenge in this modern environment.
Well, we'll talk more about the future of network news after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Mike Wagner, who is an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. Following slashed budgets and emphasis on pop culture, declining viewership, and now the suspension of NBC News anchor Brian Williams, does network news have a future? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are examining that big question this hour, talking with Mike Wagner, an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also vote in our online poll. We have the poll at WPR.org/joy. And we have Ken on Facebook who says, I suspect the nightly news is dead. The only thing that would bring it back for me would be the return of Walter Cronkite.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be something. We'd all have to watch that.
I'd be more scared than anything. Though,
yeah. Well, the New York Times headline in the Room for Debate section was, is nightly news dead? Mm-hmm. You don't think it's dead?
I don't think it's hard to say it's dead if 22 million people are watching. Now, has it been declining precipitously for decades? Yes, it has. It reached a low point in viewers in 2011, but then bounced back a bit in the last couple of years. And so whether this latest round of controversy with Brian Williams is a nail in the coffin of network news or an example of network news reasserting itself and saying, trust matters, we're going to put this guy on the sidelines and investigate what it is that he did and then make a decision. And, you know, that could be something that builds back trust if the report is thorough. The problem with NBC is that they're doing their investigation themselves. And, you know, it's pretty difficult to investigate yourself as compared to having an outside, you know, independent group do it. But we'll have to watch and see what it is they come up with. But network news is not healthy, but I would say it's not dead.
You know, I guess I heard someone say that a lot of this, the fabrications or the misremembering or the out and out lying that that Brian Williams did was not so much in reports on air, but when he was on the talk show circuit, when he was being a storyteller and trying to, I guess, sound exciting. I mean, should that make a difference?
Well, that's a good question. So one thing I read, I wish I could remember where, made the argument that Brian Williams in particular, of all the network news anchors and kind of television news personalities, really tried to walk this line of being serious news person on the air and hilarious talk show guest. And Brian Williams is very funny. He's funny on The Daily Show. He's funny on David Letterman. He's funny on Jimmy Fallon. And, you know, he felt probably pressure to be entertaining when he's on those shows. And so did he embellish the truth when he was on those shows but not when he was doing his job? That's one way of looking at it. But then when he was on the air on his program talking about his experience at the beginning of the Iraq War recently, that was the incident that started the Facebook controversy with veterans when he was on the air on his show. Now, he had done those kinds of things before, and it became a thing, if you will, after he said it on his news program. So maybe there is a distinction there, but people expect their their reporters and news anchors to tell the truth all the time, not just from 5:30 to 6 o'clock on a weeknight.
Do you have thoughts on whether he might have been pressured to be this funny guy going on other popular culture shows because of the desire to attract that younger audience?
That's a great question. He did go after Jimmy Fallon's audience, which is very young, and The Daily Show's audience, which is considerably younger than the network news audience. And so he was certainly willing to promote himself and his program on those shows. And so you don't really spend your time doing that unless you think there's going to be some kind of payoff for it. So clearly it looks like he was appealing to those younger demographics.
Yeah. And then thoughts, though, on not just Brian Williams, but the network news in general. Is it focusing more? Is there more of an emphasis on popular culture and, you know, this week's viral video than ever before?
You know, the network news, CBS, ABC and NBC are actually a little bit different in how they approach those kinds of things. And at least as it turns out, according to the Pew Center for the people in the press who do a yearly report called The State of the News Media, they show that NBC Nightly News did the least amount of celebrity news and the least amount of lifestyle news. ABC did more lifestyle than anybody else by a considerable margin, and celebrity news was less than 3% for all, 3 or 4% for all three networks. And so now we might say, well, that's good. On the other hand, the minutes of news has dropped down to less than 19 out of 30 minutes. And if the last story is always a heartwarming story that's 2 or 3 minutes long, now you're down to 16 minutes of news, and 5 to 10% of that is lifestyle, and 2 to 3% of that is celebrity. You're really cutting into news on public affairs, international affairs especially, and the kinds of things that you might want to know about how the world is working.
Well, here's Robin in Shorewood who emails, "I rarely watch network news because there's so little real news in it. It doesn't seem that they have a staff that actually does research. And what makes me more suspicious is when all four of the major networks are reporting the same thing. Instead of the network spending tens of millions of dollars for an anchor, why don't they put that money into research staff? I don't watch the news for the anchor. I watch it for the content."
There's a really great book that was written years ago called The Boys on the Bus by Timothy Krause, and the about covering the presidential campaign, I think, in 1972. And the part of that book that always stuck with me was him observing reporters from major news outlets around the country walking by the Associated Press guy's typewriter and Johnny Apple of the New York Times' typewriter to see what was their lead. I want to make sure that we report something similar to what the big dogs are reporting. And he called it pack journalism. And there's this idea that when networks report the same thing, you could say, oh, well, that must be because it's true. Or it's because they want to report the same thing so that there's less invitation for criticism from their boss. Well, NBC has this. Why don't you have this? Or from the audience, which is all the other networks say this is true, but you're making a more nuanced argument. Are you biased? And network news really wants to avoid charges of bias because they believe it's one of the things that is leading to the decline in viewership. There's a terrific book by a guy named Jonathan Ladd called Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. And he makes the argument that as we become more polarized and are willing to criticize the news media in the way that more and more people and politicians are willing to do, trust in the media goes down. You watch these more partisan outlets, which makes you trust the conventional news media even less, and it has this kind of circular effect of causing a decline in the trust of the news media and the consuming of the broad network news, which, as we were talking about before the break, has real advantages, especially for those who aren't so informed about politics or haven't had higher education.
I'm Joy Cardine talking about the future of network news with Mike Wagner, an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. And our first caller is John in Madison. Hi, John.
Good morning. Well, they've been cutting the budget and staff of network news now for at least 15 years, as well as decreasing the amount of investigative reporting, and the quality of network news has sunk accordingly. But the thing that bothers me is when Bagdikian wrote his first book about 30 years ago, it was 50 news agencies had the market. Now it's 6 conglomerates control over 90% of all the media, including the Internet. So even if they completely did away with network news, you still have this limited competitive situation where you get a lot of corporate prerogatives, you have corporate advertisers, and what I find is the coverage of the government is horrible. As Nichols or somebody phrased it, they're stenographers for the government. They present it as a given, and then if you get any analysis, it's government experts analyzing a particular part that's favorable to whatever the government view is. And what I've noticed in network news is we've really gotten censored on all sorts of things. Anything that regards the oligarch's interest, the HSBC case, the currency manipulation of the top five banks recently, the military authorization by President Obama, the Syria and Iraq war, on and on and on. If I didn't have Wisconsin Public Radio, WORT here in town, and I read The Guardian and The New York Times and Z Magazine, I would be in the dark, because the state of reported news in this country is pathetic.
Thank you, John. A comment on that, Mike Wagner?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but a lot of that is rooted in, you know, some pretty good research. The caller, John, referred to, you know, an incredible growth in how few large corporations and their subsidiaries control a lot of the information that we get, and that's true. And Madisonians, Robert McChesney, who's a professor at Illinois, and John Nichols have written a lot about this. McChesney's book, Rich Media, Poor Democracy, and its update go into this. And there's a lot of evidence that these large companies own a wide variety of news outlets that have an incentive to tell narrower stories and have more advertisers to please and more kind of companies that they work with across all different kinds of ways of doing business that they have to worry about. And that results in less critical news coverage, less watchdog news coverage, more news coverage that engages in what scholars call indexing, which the caller referred to as kind of stenography, just kind of looking at what do the government officials say on the right, what do the government officials say on the left. Okay, we've done our job, we presented a case of false equivalence, but looks balanced, and so that's good reporting. And so we look at some of that kind of stuff, and it's easy to see why people are frustrated with news coverage when the news media won't call balls and strikes on basic questions of fact and say, well, Republicans say this, Democrats say that, and we don't want to get into it. It makes it hard for people to trust the news media. But the news media feels a risk. If we say this is true and this isn't, they're going to be called biased. They're going to have protesters. They're going to lose part of their audience, and they're worried about that as well. And it's a difficult line for them to walk, but if they want to maintain trust, they should probably do the best that they can to report the verifiable truth and tell people how they know that that's true.
Is there truly a correlation between slashed budgets and the decline in the quality and viewership of network news?
It's hard to know what's causing what. NBC has 14 international bureaus, ABC 13, and CBS 5. That's way less than they used to have. And now it seems as though network television news is really building up the brand of the international reporter. And so you turn on NBC, and if something is going on internationally, it's Richard Engel is there, rather than someone who lives in Johannesburg and is dealing with what's going on there every day. And so, kind of the television star power has affected this in some kind of way. Declining budgets, as the caller pointed out, less research time, less people to check facts before they get on the air, and less people who know the local context to tell stories in more nuanced and thorough ways. All of those things are happening. The network news would say, well, that's because people don't care about those kinds of things. And when we show international stories, people turn the channel. And so there's an audience, issue here too, and what it is people are willing to watch. But, when you've got only 22 million people left watching you, they're interested in the news, and so it's probably in the interest of the broadcast media to tell it as thoroughly as they can.
Next, we'll go to Matt in Oshkosh. Hello, Matt.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to tell you why I do watch the nightly news. The first reason is to see what they do not report. I scour many, many different news sources, from the BBC, the public television's nightly business report, to all the way through right-wing talk radio. I use my phone all day off and on to scour the internet. And it's really something to see what they do not talk about. And then the other reason is to see how they spin what they do talk about.
And how do you think they spin it in a political way?
Many, many times it's politically influenced. I think there's direct influence to spin news stories in certain ways or soften them or overblow them depending on what the situation calls for the interested parties.
Yeah, and Matt, thanks for your examples, but is there can you think of a time when there was some huge story that was out there that was not being reported, or at least in your opinion?
Oh, it's hard to just pull one off the top of your head because it's a day-by-day thing. You're aware of what else is being talked about elsewhere, and then you watch the news that night. But there are many, many things that happen that in the world today that they choose not to even cover.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Matt. Mike Wagner, that's, I guess, you can't cover everything if you're only using 19 minutes, but what about that?
Well, I always say this to my journalism students. You know, there are 6 or 7 billion people in the world, and if 3 things happen to each person every day and people have no group interactions whatsoever, that's 18 billion things to choose from. And on average, 8 stories appear on the front page of the New York Times every day. So how do we get from, you know, 21 billion to 8? How do we get to 19 minutes of news from all of the things that are happening to all of the people, all of the cities, counties, states, countries, governments, interest groups, civic organizations? It's a lot to distill, and the news media have traditionally been gatekeepers. And as the news media fragments and different places cover different things in a specialized way, you know, the caller's quite right. There's just most of what happens in a day is not covered by the network news, and it never has been. But they are doing less and less than they ever have, and I think that that's very frustrating to people who've stuck with the network news and hung in there to try to understand, you know, one network's distillation of what happened in the world today.
Yeah. Pete on Facebook, seemingly referring to The Daily Show, says, "Who needs real news when you can watch fake news that only tells you what you want to hear?" Or he might be talking about Fox News.
So, well, yeah, fake news on The Daily Show is you know, very popular among younger people. It's also popular among people who are more well-informed about politics. And so the idea that The Daily Show or something like it is causing lower political knowledge hasn't really panned out. People tend to watch The Daily Show because they already follow the news and enjoy getting the jokes about mm-hmm. the news. But one thing The Daily Show does do is regularly criticize the news media. And they go after CNN and Fox News, especially those two places they go after a lot. But they go after other news outlets as well. And, you know, some evidence is out there that suggests when satirical shows lampoon the news media, it does influence the trust people have in that institution. Now, you can make the argument that the news media are bringing it upon themselves when they do a bunch of things that are easily lampoonable, but there is kind of an influence there. And in terms of cable network news like Fox or MSNBC, you know, the people who watch those in general are people who already agree with the general political slant of either cable network, and so they tend to become more solidified in their attitudes, and people who don't like those messages become more confident that those attitudes are absolutely wrong.
Gary on Facebook says, "Although I'm not a fan of the Fox and Friends programming, the Fox News program, The Five, is very good. I would encourage others to check it out before making prejudgments based on low information, liberal critics."
You know, and that's true of Fox News and MSNBC. They have a wide variety of programming, some of which is more newsy, some of which is more opinion, some of which is more of a mixture. And so to talk about Fox News with a broad brush or MSNBC with a broad brush would lead us to draw some conclusions about some shows that maybe we shouldn't draw, as the commenter points out.
We are talking about the future of network news. It's our big question during this hour. The New York Times Room for Debate section this week is featuring the question, is network news dead? And that prompted our big question. We wonder what you think. Well, what do you think about the future of network news in, you know, following the suspension of anchor Brian Williams, following complaints about the emphasis on pop culture, a declining viewership, slashed budgets? What does the future of network news hold? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You can also vote in our Big Question online poll, which you'll find at wpr.org/joy. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Big Question, where we are examining where network TV news is headed. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Mike Wagner, an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the Department and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Here's the online poll that we do have posted. And at the very end of the hour, we'll give you an opportunity to just sound off. NBC News' six-month suspension of Brian Williams for lying is the latest blow to network news outlets. Considering declining viewership, leaner budgets, and a greater focus on popular culture, how would you describe the future of network news? Do you think it's bleak? Do you think it's strong? Do you think it's so-so, or are you not sure? So you can vote in our online poll on that question. So Mike Wagner is the future bleak, strong, so-so, or are you not sure?
I'm in the not sure to so-so category. So I think if I was taking that, I would say so-so. I mean, they still have more people who watch them to get news than watch anything else that's available to get news. But those numbers are declining, and their numbers are largely built up by those over the age of 50. And so if people who are under the age of 50 aren't going to start watching the network news or engage with network news on other platforms like Twitter or those network news' homepages, ABC News, for example, has a lot of people who visit their website, and 70 million people take a look there. So, you know, the branding of these news network news organizations are still important with respect to how people decide to choose what internet information to consume. But if they can't find a way to appeal to younger viewers and still tell compelling stories about what's happening in the world and why it matters, they will likely see continuing declines in their viewership.
Let's take some more calls. Tim in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Tim.
Hello. I worked for a small network television station. You know, it's a small local station. They were affiliated with a network. And it seemed like when they got their news, most of it either came from the AP, directly from the network, or from reporters who really didn't want to be there. You know, we're a small market, so what did they want to do? They wanted to move up to a larger market. And they're not going to do very much work for the barely over minimum wage that they were making. So they pull the stories off of the AP, or, you know, they really don't do a lot of work on it. And then those are the habits that they take to the bigger stations and the habits that then they go from there to the network stations.
Oh, and so you think that that's one of the reasons why we don't have good quality at the network level, Tim?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, if your training pool is a group of people who don't care or take the easy way out, you're never going to have great news at the top.
Is that a factor, do you think, Mike Wagner?
That's an interesting point. You know, it's true that local television, local radio news people are not well paid, except for maybe the anchors and the people who do weather. But in general, you know, in the small and medium-sized markets, they're not making a lot of money, and there is an incentive to use network video or to use the Associated Press's reporting to make it a little bit easier, especially in the era of slash staffs. On the other hand, if it's true that people who are reporting at those stations want to move to bigger markets, if they're not telling great stories that show they did the work and they investigated and they had, you know, creative shots and beautiful video and great sources, they're not going to be able to move up to those larger markets, or they're going to top out at some place and not make it up to the big leagues. And so the people who are in those jobs as reporters, for the most part, work very hard, and especially on television, work hard to tell stories in visually compelling ways as well. On the other hand, we also see a lot of the network news pulling some of their more recent hires from the newspaper ranks. The New York Times' lead political reporter, or former lead political reporter, Jeff Zeleny, is now on ABC News and had no television experience. He, you know, I know Jeff, and so he graduated from the University of Nebraska, got a job at the Des Moines Register, and then went to the New York Times, and then to ABC News. That is not the traditional path in the last 15 years for television reporters, but it was the path in the earlier days of television. People would start in newspapers, maybe do radio, and then do television, and some of that's coming back. And people are getting those jobs for their reporting skill and not because they look great on television or something else, which isn't to say that that doesn't matter. We don't see a lot of unattractive people giving us the news. But I'm skeptical that it's a lousy training ground that's part of the problem.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back to when I wanted to go into this business, and my first job was my first full-time job was at a local TV station in Wausau. I didn't get paid anything, but you know what? I didn't care. I was just thrilled because I think a lot of I wanted to change the world. I wanted to inform the public, and I couldn't believe someone was actually paying me to do this.
Yeah, that's how I felt, too.
Is that still going on?
I think so. I mean, the students we have in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication here who want to be reporters are under no illusion that they're going to make six figures, you know, when they graduate. But they do know that our students get good jobs at places that want to report the news, and they are passionate about it. And they will do a lot of extra work to tell interesting stories in ethical ways. And so there still is a hunger out there for people to do that. And there's an interest in learning how to do that across multiple platforms. And so it's not so much the case as when I was in school where you would say, I want to learn broadcast news or news editorial in print. It's I want to learn how to tell great stories across all the formats as quickly and accurately as possible, which is it's a different environment, but our students are game for the work.
Yeah. A little related to our big question on the future of the national network news, but what about future of local TV news? Is that any better or worse?
You know, local television news is still number one when it comes to where do people get their information. Local TV news still does very well. It does less well than it used to, like most other forms of media except for the internet. But it still is the one where people go to the most. And often that's for issues of local import, right? So what's the weather going to be like here? How did our local teams do? But also what's happening in our city government? What about our city public safety? What about our city parks and community activities? And so local news actually had a couple of years ago had a really good year in terms of advertising. Local news nationally had been doing a little bit better and had started to crawl out of the bottoming out they had in their audience. But they do have slashed budgets, as that caller pointed out. They have to do more with less, and that's a very difficult job, especially when you're graduating from college, say, at UW-Madison, and then you get your first job, you know, in Peoria, Illinois, or Green Bay, Wisconsin, or a place that you don't know anything about. And then you've got to go cover politics where the relationships built up over 20 years are helping to determine what's happening in the local city, you know, governance structure. That's a tough job for, you know, someone who's just new to that area. And so it is hard for folks to learn how to cover public affairs in a new place.
Let's go to Peter in Appleton. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to say about the news. I think people are forgetting way back the purpose of the news, not just to be a trivial pursuit or to find out about this story or that, but to be educated as people to make better decisions and to learn how to think critically and take on more responsibility toward their lives and their communities, and to preserve, to be an educated society, to make better decisions that affect ourselves as well as others, not just a trivial pursuit of this is what's happening, you know.
You're here. Peter, are you a former journalism professor by any chance?
No, but I was top of my class in economics. And,
I believe it.
I had a scholarship to a medical school. But other than that, I'm still just one person here trying to, you know, promote higher thought.
Thank you. Have we forgotten the purpose of news?
I don't know.
As the consumer, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think we are more hostile and more skeptical of the information we encounter than the survey evidence shows that we used to be, you know? So, I mean, now people who distrust kind of the network news, they learn about the political world differently than people used to, and they resist messages that are attributed to the network news. And so not only do they lose just learning basic facts about what's happening, that Trivial Pursuit side of things, they also then use those facts to interpret how things are going in the country, what it is they want, who it is they want to vote for. But they also use that to determine where they're going to get the rest of their information. And increasingly, people are choosing more partisan outlets, which tend to reinforce their own ideas, which also diminishes that careful, deliberative thought that we might like people to have. And that results in, as one of the causes of greater polarization in our country, which makes it harder to govern, which makes it harder for regular people to get along, and causes all kinds of problems that we didn't have in the heyday of network news.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being here.
That's my pleasure.
Yeah. Mike Wagner, assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. Okay, well, you've heard from Mike Wagner and some of our callers. What do you think? It's time for you to sound off on what you think about the future of network news. Does it have a future? Is it dead? Do you still watch? What would make you come back? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Darlene in Merrill is with us. Hello, Darlene.
Yes, hi. The local media, I have been aggravated by their reading press releases because you get the same verbatim news regardless of what station you're looking at. They're not doing the investigative journalism that it used to be years ago, and it gets to be very maddening.
All right. Thank you very much, Darlene. Tim on Facebook says, growing up, when news anchors started stating their opinion, the word editorial appeared on the screen. When that practice stopped, that started the decline of journalism. News is not about ratings. It is about informing the citizenry. What is on TV now is not journalism or news. All right, well, thanks for both of your sound-off comments. You can continue to sound off on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or you can continue voting in our online poll. Our big question is posted on WPR.org/joy. Thanks very much to Bill Martins, to Caleb Lato, and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including our discussion coming up in our next hour. We'll talk with a guest reporter to discuss Governor Walker's proposed budget cuts to state parks, trails, and recreational areas. That's coming up in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.